darlings. I'm Charlize, the founder of online storytelling platform Girls Will Be Boys, and this is Say It With Your Chest, a podcast which aims to shine light on the corners of important conversations which are so often missed out of the media or seen as taboo. This Girls Will Be Boys podcast offers you an opportunity to enter different people's worlds, share unfiltered conversations, and encourage our guests to say it with their chest.
Like, you need a separate person that's not a social worker, like, just for black people through that, like, literally a guidance counselor or something, or I guess like more black social workers. With the dynamic with my birth parents, because there was a lot of abuse, I wasn't really allowed to have any kind of identity, let alone my race. You can't move out of the town of colorism,
right?
A dark skinned woman,
right?
Where are you going? It's everywhere,
literally,
even in places where everybody is black, in some ways, even worse there.
Today, we are back with the incredible Sky. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Of course, my name is Sky, and I am a model. Yeah, that's my introduction,
and other things, but okay, yeah, we'll stick
to yeah,
and your pronouns,
she, her.
Amazing. And if you didn't know, this is my fiance. But today, what I wanted to talk to you about is growing up in care. And I just kind of want to have a discussion about race, identity, and the care system. So if we could start off by just talking about what age you're in care and for how long and which location.
Okay, so I was in foster care from age 8 to 16, so 8 years roughly, and it was in a small town in South Wales called Carmarthen, which is very different to England or anywhere else I'd lived. And that was my first time ever going to Wales or anywhere so small. I'd never lived like in a small town or village. So yeah, it was.
And is it fair to say that the majority of the time you were in care was with white families?
Yeah, all my foster families were white, pretty much, except for one girl. Everyone I interacted with, like at foster homes, were white. All my social workers were white. Everyone in my school was white. All my teachers, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I remember when we were first kind of like talking about you growing up in care, like when we had met. And I remember you told me this story about your hair. And I feel like
that story
I just feel like this story needs to be told to everyone, just because it is such a huge part in a black woman's identity. And I feel like a lot of the time our relationship with our hair sort of like comes from being at home and growing up at home and being around our culture, and you know, like our family is obviously black. So would you like to tell the story just about your experience with your hair whilst being in care?
Yeah, so obviously, as I just mentioned, it was in a really small town in South Wales, where there were, as far as I know, like not really any other black people in the town. Therefore, and obviously like where this was, what, 21 years ago, there were also like no black hair products stocked in any shops. And there were like, there were no black hair shops like in the vicinity. So that made it really challenging for me to find any products to like style my hair with, to have at all. So I went through a period of a couple of years trying to get products, requesting products like from my foster mum and from my social worker. Every time we had catch-ups, and we had these things called review meetings, which would take place, I think, like quarterly or bi-monthly, where we would like discuss everything about like where I lived and what was going on. And I would had a booklet that I could fill out, and I would always like request that I wanted products for my hair, because the products at my foster home were all geared towards people without like Afro hair. And there was like nothing for me, and I really needed it, and it was just making like every day difficult. So I went through a period of a couple of years of like requesting that, and it was like a whole procedure I had to go through to get it, because there was nothing in the town, and they were saying they would need to like order it offline or get it from London, but that was going to be really difficult. And it was like a whole appeal process, which was crazy to me. I never thought something would be so difficult. Mm. And at such a young age, going through feeling like I needed to petition to get that was just challenging. And I was just really perplexed by it because it's just like, I just want products for my hair. I knew there weren't any around, but I just thought, like, you're all grown up, so can't you just get your hands on something? Like, I don't understand why it's so difficult. I guess it really made me feel like I was super demanding and like I was asking for too much. And it made me feel really uncomfortable to ask for things anyway, just because I knew that they were being paid for by social services and that like my parents wouldn't be providing it. And it was like someone else's responsibility to provide it. And it made me feel like uncomfortable that I couldn't provide it for myself. But due to my age, obviously I wasn't going to be able to do that for myself. So eventually they talked about like getting products and they kind of agreed to, but they offered me like two options because they were saying that they would have to like keep obviously getting the products in as I ran out. So their solution was that they would pay for me to go to Swansea or Cardiff, which is like one of the bigger cities in Wales, for me to go and have my hair relaxed in a salon. Like that was their solution. And then that would be, in their mind, like in their ignorance, a one-off solution to me constantly demanding like more products. And obviously as time went on, they believed I would just like ask for more and more products. It wouldn't just be like shampoo and conditioner. I would keep asking. And they were saying that it was expensive, even though it's like there's money allocated for my care. That's the whole point. So they wanted me to have my hair relaxed. And I told them I'm not doing that because I don't want a permanent solution. It's not a problem to me. I just want something I can like nourish my curls with. I don't want a solution of relaxing my hair. Like I didn't hate my hair. I had no problems with my hair, except I just was upset that I couldn't care for it and that it was like getting into not good condition. So yeah, they were pushing for the relaxing alternative for me to have my hair, which is basically like a chemical straightening process, if anyone doesn't know, but I think most Black people will be aware of it. But yeah, they were adamant that that would be like the best option. And they were really displeased when I was reluctant to that option because they were saying like, I should be grateful because it's an expensive like treatment and that they would pay for me to like, they would drive me up to one of the bigger cities and I would get to like have a salon experience. And it's like, no, I don't want that.
There's so many things to pick up on from what you just said. First of all, the fact that they were offering it as a solution implies that there's a problem.
Exactly.
To you, that there was no problem with like the hair that you had. You just wanted to look after it.
Yeah.
So there's that, but there's also that it would be a one-off solution.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
It's like you can't just relax hair once. More hair grows out of the head.
Exactly.
That is also a constant.
Yeah.
Which just like implies their ignorance.
Exactly.
Obviously, we already know that that will probably be the case. But especially in like that kind of town.
Yeah.
I understand that there was not a lot of Black people at all.
No.
I just think it's so interesting because me, I was kind of the opposite where like all that was shoved in my face because of Eurocentric beauty standards being shoved in my face left, right and center. I wanted to relax my hair from the age of 8 and I was begging and begging my mum and she was like, we're not doing that. Like until you really know and like you can better understand and make an informed decision on why you want to do that if you can look after your hair.
Yeah.
But the fact that you knew that you loved your curls from day dot, I just think it's so nice and it's so cute. I'm just imagining baby Sky. I just think it's so cute.
I think I really always wanted to have my curls out as a child and my birth parents were like, it was something they didn't really allow me to like experiment with, to have like nice styles and stuff. So I felt really attached to my hair as like something that helped me feel more powerful. And even though I wasn't with my family anymore and I didn't really feel like attached to them in like a way where I missed them, my hair was like something I really held on to as part of my identity because I was still like really proud to be Black even though I had like not a good relationship with my parents. And it was something that I knew, like whether I looked after and was proud of it and embraced it or I didn't, was still going to set me apart from everyone around me at the time. So I decided, like, obviously I wanted to work with it and be proud of it because I was going to be different regardless. So it was going to be like double the hate if I was down on myself and also like experiencing negativeness from everyone around me in like the town and at school. Mm. I just didn't want it to be double the hurt on me. So I just figured, well, I may as well just try to love it. But yeah.
What other ways do you feel like you try to claim or like discover your Black identity? Because you didn't have the support of parents giving you that from like the get-go without a choice kind of thing. So what ways do you feel like you helped you?
I feel like trying to research stuff about like where the Caribbean side of my family is like from, my heritage, they're St. Lucian. So learning more stuff about like the island, where it was, what kind of things were there, learning about the food, and just learning like how I could implement that into like what's more ways I could try and feel more connected to my culture given like my circumstances. That was like all I really could do at that age. I feel like it was simplified because of my age, and I think that's why I really like went hard for getting the hair products, because that's the only thing I felt like I could anchor to like any form of my identity, just because my age and my circumstances, a lot of things were out of my control. And that's the one thing that I felt like, well, I can just keep talking and asking for it, because I knew like I wasn't gonna like get to be reunited with my family, and I wasn't going to get to like travel to the Caribbean or get a Black parent, Black foster parent, or like have Black friends because of where I live. So I just thought, well, at least until for the next, what, like 8 to 10 years, I'm going to be stuck here. So that is the one thing that I can have with me for like comfort and safety.
And then becoming a care leaver and going out into the world on your own, how... Then when you had a few more resources, then what was it that you were doing to anchor your identity?
Trying to like go to more live music by Black artists. I was like super into concerts. So I was like, music was something that really helped me. And like, that was a way that I could be like immersed in my culture. So like learning about Black history or like Black culture through music. So that was something I did, went to more concerts, I guess, like was able to interact with more Black people and have like Black friends and just incorporate like parts of my culture into like my style, because there was more options around and because I was in bigger cities, because I started living in bigger cities from the age of 16. So there was a more broad range of like people and like more options just for everything, even like art galleries, exhibitions, talks, different things like that.
I know you love a concert.
Yeah.
I know you were a barb.
I was a barb. I was the one to queue and be pressed against the railings for 16 hours. Like, that was like something that I really enjoyed, and I was really into music. So, yeah.
Do you feel like connecting with other care leavers when you kind of like, or like when did you start to connect with other care leavers or like seek out care leavers to have that connection with?
It wasn't really until probably about 4 or 5 years ago that I really connected with like any care leavers that were like grown up or who, especially anyone Black who'd been through like similar experiences to me, or just had grown up Black in care with in a predominantly white area with white foster parents. I started to like connect with a small community of people online, which was actually like super cathartic, because before that I feel like I had no representation or reference point of like someone like me in care. I just had like the negative stereotypes that are I guess like put out into society, and which a lot are untrue, and also that like a lot of that doesn't really highlight anyone Black. So yeah, it wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago when I started to like connect with the community, like a small community of Black care leavers who are all around my age, like on social media, and that really helped me understand more and just feel less shame to talk about it, and more like there's so many different ways you can be a care leaver, and just that it's like a multifaceted identity. It doesn't have to like engulf the whole narrative of you as a person, but it is something that you can be proud of and is still part of your identity because it does definitely shape you. Especially, yeah, if you've already experienced a lot of trauma in your life and then you go through like a second coming of trauma. It's like starting your whole life again when you're 8 and getting like a second horrible childhood.
Yeah.
But it comes with the double horribleness of like having more awareness because you're getting older, so you understand more what's going on and like the plight that comes with that. So I think, yeah.
You mentioned like feeling validated and not having to feel shame about being a care leaver. Did you feel shame at any point in your life? And when do you feel like you were able to release that?
I definitely felt shame just because like I knew it was obvious to people that like I didn't live with my birth parents, and I felt shame just because I felt like nervous and anxious like at school for things like parents' evening, for like the questions. And I felt a lot of shame just because, not because I was ashamed to be different, but I knew that like that was the reason why I had such a hard time in school. And it was an added layer of something that, othered me from everybody else. And I felt shame that like that was a situation that my family was in and that there was nothing I could do to change it. So it made me feel like, yeah, I had no power or control over, because no matter what I did or how positive I thought, like because I was a child, there was nothing I could do to change my circumstances. It was all in the hands of other people who didn't really seem very concerned or invested in making it something that I could be like proud of or something that I was comfortable with. And I think, yeah, that
just, obviously like the misconceptions of being in care wouldn't have helped. I mean, I know even for me, all I saw on TV was Tracy Beaker. Like, that was the only representation of, like, kids in foster care.
And exactly, yeah.
There was no real life. I mean, obviously, it's a program, so it's going to be made for entertainment. But it wasn't, I don't feel like it was educational, especially now knowing, like, at least your story. I feel like there's a major disconnect for the representation that there is of kids in care, and especially Black kids in care.
Yeah, the complexities is just, I think for me personally, like being mixed race already, like that can sometimes displace you from connecting to like your identity and your culture if like your white parent is not something that's important to them or that they're invested in. You can already feel like displaced, but then to be further displaced from anyone that's a blood relation. I mean, I did have my siblings, but there are times when we were split up in foster homes as well. So it's a really confusing thing to like navigate without like anyone to really go to, because they can't understand, because like none of them are Black. So it's like you have social workers, but there's as much as they can understand. There's complexities. It's like you need a separate person that's not a social worker, like just for Black people to like help them through that, like literally a guidance counselor or something, or I guess like more Black social workers, more Black foster carers, or just not going into care in that area.
I was going to ask you about your identity with being mixed, because I know like even for me being full Black, but growing up somewhere that there was like 3 Black people in my year at school. I know I've from a young age felt too much or not enough. And like sometimes I felt like I was too white for the Black kids, too Black for the white kids. And like I understand the too much, not enough. And I just wondered if, or not if, but how you dealt with conflicting feelings of your identity, knowing that one of your parents is white and that some people would see you as white or white adjacent, more white adjacent than Black. It's like people will pick and choose which side of, well, which parent they want to place you with. Like, how did you deal with those feelings?
I feel like I only had to start confronting like the real confliction when I went into foster care, because before that I was homeschooled, so I was with my birth parents and my siblings all of the time, and we traveled like all around the world. So I did get to see like lots of different people from lots of different races. And with the dynamic with my birth parents, because there was a lot of abuse, I wasn't really allowed to have any kind of identity, just like as a person, let alone my race or anything to do with my heritage or being mixed race. So I guess I just was, I don't know what I was just there. I don't know. I guess I just knew I was walking around and I was alive, but I had no, like, there was no way that I could express myself, have an identity, like have a personality, have like any likes or interests because of the way that they were. Mm-hmm. So, but obviously I was aware that I was Black. And then moving to that small town, I realized that, like, because there were no other Black people around, all of their like hatred and confusion and like ignorance, or I don't know, just everything, their misinformation was going to be directed at me.
Mm.
Like they weren't going to go easy just because I had one white parent. Mm. As far as they're concerned, like I'm probably some of the first, or like probably the only Black person they've ever interacted with.
Mm.
So as far as they're concerned, like I'm Black. But I think then like after that, when I got older and moved to other cities, that, yeah, like I do feel like then when I interacted with more Black people, that it was like they didn't feel that I was super connected like with my culture.
Mm.
Because I hadn't gone through like any of the traditions of growing up in a Black household or having like anyone Black around me who was older. And because I had to learn a lot of those things myself, it was guesswork. So I think like not coming from London, having traveled loads, and then having lived in Wales, and like even my accent, loads of things just made people feel like
disconnected,
not accepting of me as like a Black person.
Mm.
So I think that was just confusing to me as well. So I think that was conflicting and like a lot to deal with, because to me, I didn't believe that you had to be a certain way to be Black.
Mm.
And it was out of my control, the fact that I couldn't pick up traditions and I couldn't like be immersed in the culture.
Mm.
But obviously that's not something I would want to just share with every single person who had something disparaging to say, because it's like then I would have to go into my whole life,
yeah,
and explain how like my dad didn't even really seem like someone who was like proud to be Black, and my dad, it's not like he wanted me to embrace my identity.
Mm.
And I didn't have anything yet growing up that was like that, so I guess I was just like, I have no choice to be this way, and I'm living proof that there's not one way to be Black.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, all you can do is try to learn in terms of like about your identity and culture and stuff, and like culture and like a Black identity, is a lot of it is formed around community.
Mm-hmm.
Which I had none of.
Mm.
So it's like my community was literally all in my head, or like looking up to people like pop stars or celebrities and stuff, because that's all I had, is basically like my imagination.
Mm.
So, and my siblings, I did have them, but obviously they're in the same boat as me.
Yeah.
And people's identities are not going to be the exact same just because they're all in a family and they're all Black.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have, obviously, their separate personalities. So
do you feel like when you started to, you know, that time when you started to hang around or meet more Black people who were kind of like, eh, about you, do you feel like that was the time that you were aware of colorism? Like, do you feel like that's when it kind of like came about that people can see you as different things even if you're Black?
I think in relation to like me, I could then see it, but I think prior to that I realized that I was only having a really hard time like where I grew up, because there were no other Black people.
Mm.
Like, I knew if there was someone darker skinned than me at my school, it would be worse for them.
Mm.
I realized that just through like having traveled and having lived in London prior to that for all of my life.
Yes.
Like, I saw through being in other parts of the world and living in London, and even just being like out and about with my parents and people's reactions to like my parents as an interracial couple and like my dad's skin tone, and then seeing us, I saw like the hostility, even though he is not a dark-skinned woman, but I saw like the hostility, and I feel like I was really observant as a child, as much as you can be aware of like colorism at those ages. But I feel like I did realize that it was all relative, and I was having that really intense bad time in school and stuff because there were no other black people around or like people of color. But yeah, it made me realize that there's still lots of like friction still like with black people in terms of like sometimes accepting other black people. And I can see how there's like divide and stuff because lots of people that feel that they're not accepted group together, and like they're grouping obviously like usually light skinned people and dark skinned people like against each other, and lots of people who grew up in areas outside of London or in predominantly white areas, smaller towns and villages around the country, like they have similar experiences. So it's really difficult for them to come out the mindset of like the intensity of their experience and see that it's all relative, because their experiences in where they grew up has been like assimilation of having like a dark skinned person's experience somewhere else. Right. So where that's really ingrained in them because it's really traumatizing, it's difficult for them to come out of that when they move to somewhere else that's a bigger city and where there are like lots of different black people. I think it's like that causes them to think of things in one way, and then when they express that, it's then difficult for like dark-skinned black people to accept them and or to be able to like listen to that continuously when they have an experience that is going to be like ongoingly difficult. Is ongoingly a word? Anyway, yeah.
It doesn't matter. I get what you mean. Yeah. I feel like also it is kind of when you see, as a dark-skinned person, when you see the privileges that light-skinned people or mixed-race people are getting, and then when they're behaving in a way like it's not a privilege, I feel like that causes so much friction in the community because it just feels like the same ignorance as any other race that is against like black people. It's like, how can you not see what's going on and speak up for it, or at least just acknowledge that like there is privilege in, as much as it might not feel like it because you was bullied in school, like, so I get like,
what school doesn't go on forever. So it's like when you're constantly reiterating like the trauma that you experience for, let's say in my case, like what, a 7 to 8 year period, it's like, okay, but some people have that for the remainder of their life.
Right. When you step out into like, quote unquote, the real world, when it's not just like kids who don't know what they're talking about and just bully people, the script is flipped.
Yeah.
You are then exotic or like more, you are then desirable.
Yeah.
Where dark skinned people, well, dark skinned women, I feel like, are just like pushed further down.
Exactly.
The more life goes on.
You don't have a chance. Well, I can't obviously speak for you, but I think like in terms of like, I had the opportunity to get to an age where I could earn an income and move out of a small town where I was experiencing racism. You can't move out of the town of colorism as a dark-skinned woman.
Right.
Where are you going? It's everywhere.
Literally.
Even in places where everybody is black.
Yeah.
Like, it's in some ways even worse there. So, yeah.
We digress. I wanted to ask, how do you feel the care system could be improved for black people in care?
Wow, yeah. I think in a lot of ways, because it's complex, and I do feel like special care needs to be taken. I think more like adjustments and more thorough like training and screening for people that want to become foster carers to realize about the added responsibility and the fact that like it's a real possibility that you can like have a black foster child, and how are you prepared for that? Like, how are you prepared for that? And if it's something that you feel is like not going to fit into like the picture that you want for the family that you already have, then you need to really question like why you're trying to get into that profession, because it is a job and it's a really important job, and there's a lot that comes with it, and I just feel like it's not a one size fits all. I think like social services should do more to prepare foster parents for like that, and for ways that they can make that child feel comfortable and not like a problem. They already feel like they're being passed around, and they're already aware that, like, for whatever reason, their birth parents can't care for them. And now, like, social services are their parents, so they have a duty of care. And I think, yeah, it needs to be more specialized. There needs to be more training for social workers. There needs to be more support, and you need to be listened to more, I think. And also, like, Black children in care also need to be allowed, be afforded to be children as well. Like, the adultification of Black kids in care is, like, already from when you get to care, they're just thinking, like, okay, you're a rotten apple. You're just, like, it's already, you're seen as bad, not whatever it is, like, you don't fit into the picture. And yeah, it's really difficult for you to then have, like, a softness and be treated like a child and be protected. And then, because so many things are going wrong, you have to keep speaking up for yourself, which makes them again see you as less of a child,
right?
And more just like an annoying adult that keeps asking for things. And it creates, like, a lot of tension. I know, like, for all my years in care, I really, like, I would try and speak up for myself and advocate for myself because I had no one else. And I know that, like, that created a lot of tension within, like, my foster family and with social workers, because they thought that I thought I was better than them. And, like, I should be grateful about the fact that I had somewhere to live, because my parents didn't want me. So for me to them dare to request anything, which was just my basic human right, like, who do I think I am? So I think that was something that was ongoing, and it's very much not an attitude that I feel is taken towards white children in care, because I observed it, like, around me. And I would see that they were just seen as, like, docile, and there's no way they wouldn't be getting something to wash their hair with,
right?
There's no way. And they wouldn't be talking about them in a way like they're adults, like saying that they're manipulative or ungrateful. Like, those wouldn't be descriptors for the white children,
right?
If they had, like, angry outbursts, it would be like, oh, okay, it's just because they're upset. If you have angry outbursts as a Black person in care, you're getting moved somewhere else, probably into, like, a group home, and then, like, the pipeline for, like, further offending or prison pipeline begins. And I just feel like, yeah, you're really made to be seen as an adult by everyone around you from a young age. And they don't care to look into the complexities of why you've had to be an adult from so young. That's, like, trauma that you've brought to care. And then on top of that, when you get there, they're just, like, fend for yourself. So it's like, do you want me to lay down and die? Or, like, do you want me to speak up for myself? Because when I try to, it's, yeah, it's difficult. So I think I really struggled with that. And a lot of people felt like I thought I was better than them. I thought I knew better than them. I mean, I did. I did. But also it's like, yeah, only because you're not, you can't be bothered to research and learn.
Right.
There's no reason why an 8-year-old child should know better how to do your job than you. If you're a social worker or you work in social services, like, you're a fully grown adult. You've gone to university, like, you've chosen to get into this profession, and supposedly you have ongoing training and, like, you interact with loads of people. So you're able to, like, find ways to continue to learn.
You should know better.
Yeah. All I have is my voice, so obviously I'm going to have to use it. So, yeah.
So, the question. What's one apology that you would like to take back that you've made in the past?
This is a hard one. God, I actually don't know. Like, that has really stumped me.
But you knew it was coming.
I know. But I just...
I mean, it's quite a broad question. Maybe think about it in context of what we've just spoken about.
Okay. I think, like, I guess trying to quieten myself down. That's not really an apology.
Do you feel like you maybe apologize for not being Black enough, quote unquote, at any point?
I definitely feel like I overcompensated to go with, like, what I thought would let people give me the pass as being Black enough. Like, they'd be like, okay, she's certified now,
right?
That's cool. So I feel like I went overboard. I don't know. Yeah,
so I guess you were kind of, in a way, apologizing. So Oh, no.
Do you know what? Actually, yeah, like apologizing for the fact that like I didn't get to be immersed in Black culture and be around community from a young age.
When it wasn't actually your fault.
Yeah, like feeling shame for the fact that like I hadn't visited where my dad's side of the family was from. I didn't know loads about it if people asked me questions. I didn't know how to cook like any Caribbean food. Feeling like I had to lie about those things. Otherwise they would be like, what? I don't even think you're not Black.
Right. Okay. That's a fair one. That's a good one.
We got there.
And just for anyone who might be in a similar position that you were and are looking for other care leavers online, do you have any profiles to share or any friends?
Yes, I do. Ones that really helped me. My friend Keely, she's amazing. She's also a care leaver, Black care leaver, living in London. She runs a page called The Care Leaver Legacy, or one word on Instagram. It's a discussion-led platform that also offers like helpful hints and tips and signposts like other resources. It also spotlights like care leavers that are making changes and trailblazing, doing things that are amazing. And then the next one is the Black Care Experience, which is a platform, again, all one word, the Black Care Experience, run by Judith Denton, who is like, she's like a public speaker, motivational coach, but she also started the first Black Care Conference, which is just basically a workshop-led conference where loads of Black service users, which would be like people who've been in foster care or been through the care system, as well as social workers and other people that work, in that sector, all meet and they can discuss like ways that we can champion each other, ways that we can like come together to affect change and see like what we can continuously be doing. So it's made up of like, workshop led like activities, as well as like a guest panel. So they had the first one this year.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I think that's the first thing I heard of. They're specifically like for Black people, because I know there are other yearly things. Those are the things.
Great.
Those are my things.
Well, thank you so much, Bimi, just for being open and honest and vulnerable. And I hope that it can help at least one other person who might be struggling with the same issues. So I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you. I'm glad we got to talk about it. So thank you for having me.
And I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, babe.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Say It With Your Chest. If you're loving the conversations that we're having, make sure to rate us 5 stars and to leave a review wherever you're watching or listening right now. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe to all things Say It With Your Chest, and make sure you follow Girls Who Are Boys on Instagram and TikTok to know when the next episode will drop. See you next time. Insanity Group.